Welcome to the Engage and Empower podcast. Behind every successful company is an intentional and innovative approach to empowering your most valuable asset, your people. Join me in having conversations with people and talent leaders as we share our journeys and unpack what it takes to build strong, cohesive teams and employee experiences. From executives at early stage startups to innovators at large public companies, we'll capture the compelling stories of the people behind people teams. Hello, hello, and thank you for tuning in to the Engage and Empower podcast. I'm your host, Resika Rajagopalan, and today I'm really excited to be chatting with the co-founder and CEO of Kona, Sid Pandya. Sid, you've been working on some cool stuff, and so I'm excited to learn more about you and Kona today. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Super excited.
Yeah. So to get us started, tell us a little bit about your background and what inspired you to found Kona. Tell us a little bit about Kona's mission.
So Kona has been around for about a year and a half now. So we started the company in October 2019. A bit about my background. So I'm Indian. I'm from India. I was born in Dubai, then moved to Hong Kong, then moved to India, then moved to the US, where I studied computer science at UCLA. And having moved around so much, I guess like I went to something like 9 or 10 different schools throughout my 13 years of schooling. I was never in one school, one place for too long. And fun fact about that, as a result of moving around so much, I picked up different accents wherever I went. So I lived in Hong Kong for a bit and went to an English school, like a British school. My teachers and everyone were all English. So I picked up an English accent there. And then, of course, I'm Indian. So technically, my natural accent is my Indian one. And then came to the US and picked up an American accent here, which is a cool, fun fact. And it's a cool party trick. But I guess the reason I always did that is I'm like super extroverted. I like took a personality assessment once and came out like 99th percentile in extroversion. I love meeting new people. I love being socially adaptable. And so emotional intelligence, things like that, has always been something that I've always cared about. And so in 2019, when we started the company, we basically kind of noticed that in a remote environment, the whole softer side of things, we had a hypothesis that it would be difficult to manage. And so we said, okay, I was still in college. Myself and my co-founders, Andrew and Kareen, we just said, we think there might be a problem here. We're not sure. Let's try to validate this. And so we talked to 150 remote managers before writing a single line of code or having any idea of what we're going to build, and just asked them, what is the hardest part about your job? What do you find difficult about work? And kind of overwhelmingly heard the same thing again and again, which was, in a remote environment, I, as a manager, find the work part really easy. Like, it's not hard to assign tasks or anything, but what's really hard is building the relationship. How do I understand what are the communication styles of people on my team? How are they feeling? What's going on in their lives? How do I build a relationship with them? How do I motivate them? And so the whole gamut of the softer side of remote work is something that's not natural to people. Virtual interaction and working virtually with people is not something we're hardwired to be doing, but that's how work is going to be going forward, whether remote or hybrid. And that's really the mission of what we're trying to do, is make work a happier and more connected place for everyone and make emotional intelligence the default.
Yeah, I love that. And what great timing, right? Especially as we kind of jump into this full steam over the last year. So how does Kona exactly work? Like, what is it that you support managers and teams? Like, how do you give them more insight into how they can build stronger morale and support each other better and all those kinds of things?
So as a startup, you want to start by doing one thing really well. Long term, we want to be the culture platform for teams, but that's a really big, hard problem to solve. So the one thing that we're, I guess, the best at, or the one thing that we do really well is, and the problem we're solving there, the niche early thing that we're starting with is, as a manager, I don't know how my team is feeling. So Kona does daily emotional check-ins with the team. And so what it does is you install Kona to your Slack, and we've started with a Slack integration. And Kona will check in the channel every day saying, hey, how's everyone feeling today? So you put down a color, red, yellow, or green. You put down an emoji, and then you put down a comment saying how you're feeling. So it could be like, hey, I'm green today. I just saw this funny TikTok, and drop a link to the TikTok in the comment. And people might watch it and laugh about it, have a conversation about it. Or something even more serious, like, hey, I'm red today. I'm super frustrated with a bunch of blockers that I have, or I have too many meetings, and I don't have enough time to actually get deep work done. And so people within our early customers are having, actually, on one end, having super fun conversations and being able to build a relationship and kind of showing up as themselves at work, which is really fun and important for relationship building. But two, on the other hand, they're having super serious conversations in Kona too sometimes, where people are sharing things about their mental health, their sickness, people in their family, kind of really opening up and building that vulnerability, which is so essential to creating an environment of psychological safety and trust on a team.
Yeah, no, totally. One of the things that I really liked about Kona when you first shared the concept with me was this idea that you're able to kind of input when I'm feeling stressed, this is how I like to be supported. When I'm feeling creative, this is how I like to feel supported. When I'm feeling X, this is how I like to feel supported. And I think that that's so helpful because then when you kind of put in, all right, this is where my head's at today, your entire team kind of knows, okay, this is how I can best show up for this person. And it reminded me of an assessment that, or this tool that I've used at past companies called Real Colors, which is the exact same thing. Like not everybody when they're stressed likes to be supported the same way. We tend to usually support other people in the way we like to be supported. And a lot of times that can be really counterproductive. And so I'm curious, like, what have you learned through your product in that realm? Like, did people find they were providing the wrong kind of support to their team members? Or did managers find that they were not as in sync as they thought around how the team morale was or how people were feeling? Or like, what were some of the insights that came out of this?
I think one of the things that was really unexpected is how open and vulnerable people are comfortable being if you create an environment where that vulnerability is welcomed. And so very often we would hear managers that started using Kona saying, hey, I clearly have this problem of I want to get my team to feel more connected. I want to know how they're feeling. I don't know what's going on in their lives, but I don't think they're actually going to tell me the truth. I think they're always going to put down green. And so the key thing we noticed there is if you want people to be vulnerable, it has to start from the manager. And so the manager has to, in the first few days, put down yellows and reds, share what's not going well in their life, and then people open up. And so what was unexpected is, I guess, like how much, even on the teams where the manager didn't expect people to open up, how much people do that when there's vulnerability coming from the top. And once you break open that barrier, then the floodgates really start opening. And so, yes, to answer your question, very often we'll see managers discover things that they just never would have known without Kona. And they tell us things like, hey, yeah, if this person marked a red today, I thought they were doing totally fine. And I had a conversation with them and they'd just been feeling super burned out. So I gave them a couple of days off. I said, hey, you need to take some time off. And people are being able to have those conversations because of Kona. And because Kona is, we hear this all the time, is it's a low lift, easy way to open up and have conversations about how you're feeling. And really in a remote team, if you're hiring well, you don't really have to have too many conversations about like checking in on actual work progress. People, by and large, are going to bring up work things on their own. They'll get the work part done. And it's really the non-work, the kind of like emotional aspect of things where you need to support them, because happier people work better. And people that feel more connected to their team are more likely to A, be more productive, B, be more engaged. And that engagement spreads. And that's like a good kind of contagion within the company. But at the end of the day, those people are more likely to stay longer at a company, because when you feel like you're cared for and you're supported, that's not a team you really ever want to leave.
Yeah, 100%. And it makes all of the tougher conversations easier, I think, right? Like when somebody's giving you constructive feedback, you're like, oh, you know, this person cares about me. They care about the things that I value outside of work. Like this is to build me up as a person. This isn't this transactional thing that we're having here. So I think just on all fronts, that's always really helpful. One of the things that I always like to ask, especially just around a lot of these software tools that drive connection between a manager and a direct reporter around a team, is like, what's your advice around finding the balance between using that software and then getting to a place where managers are actually building trust and investing in relationships with their direct, where Kona doesn't have to say that you're feeling red today, but at your one-on-one, your direct report's like, hey, like I'm actually, you know, feeling a little bit overloaded. I don't have a lot of bandwidth. It's kind of stressing me out. And like, you know, have you ever found that people share that stuff on Kona and then one-on-one comes up and they're all like, you know, no, everything's fine. Like, where's the right balance so that people are able to get to that without the actual software?
Great question. What I always say is Kona is not the magic wand solution to building connection on the team, but at the end of the day, it is a tool. It's going to help you. And there's tons of things that we do to help promote vulnerability and things like that. And obviously we've been able to show that we're able to get people to open up in ways that other tools that try to do the same check-in can't. And that's one part of it. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to the manager to build that one-on-one relationship with the team and make them feel like it's okay to not be okay and open up and be vulnerable. And so the one-on-ones, the weekly one-on-ones are definitely like a core aspect of making that happen. What we hear very often, Kona actually links to your one-on-ones. You can link your Google Calendar and put down, these are my one-on-ones with people. And so before your one-on-one, Kona will actually message you saying, hey, these are the persons, you're about to have a one-on-one with Sid. And this is the check-ins that Sid just did this week. These are the situations in which he was yellow or red. This is what's going on in his life. And people bring that up all the time in their one-on-one saying, hey, I saw that you were yellow this day. Let's talk more about that. And so it actually saves people time. And what we're hearing very often is the manager doesn't then have to do the awkward initial like 10 minutes of small talk to be able to get that person to feel comfortable enough to open up, because they can just immediately say, hey, saw that on Wednesday you marked this in Kona. Let's talk about that first and open up, or share something that they shared in Kona and have a discussion about that. And so Kona is not the solution. It's a way for you to get information about how your team is feeling so that you can do something about it. And so really that doing something about it comes down to the manager. And Kona, we've seen, becomes a lot more engaged with and a lot more useful when the manager is actually acting on some of the information that they're getting within the tool. So if people are checking in, saying that they're stressed or frustrated or something's wrong, making sure that they feel supported. And then on the other hand, when they're checking in saying everything is good, making sure that they feel recognized and cared for, and some sort of feedback loop of engagement happening back and forth because of things they shared in Kona. And so it's really just a way to show that you care. And there's many ways to do that. And it's a way to get information and aggregate it and have deeper conversations than what you would have been able to have without it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like any other survey tool where like sending out the survey itself is not going to solve anything, but it shows employees that this is something that you're invested in supporting them with. And if you kind of supplement that by actually talking live and one-on-ones and things like that, it really drives that concept home.
The key difference I would say between us and a survey is that very often surveys are anonymous. And Kona is intentionally public within the team and everyone can see it. And so what we actually heard that we didn't expect is typically with surveys, something needs to be done about it. And that's definitely true to an extent with Kona. But what we're hearing really often is just the fact that I'm being asked how I'm feeling every day and being given an opportunity to share with the team, just that fact makes me feel better and more cared for. So that's kind of one of those interesting like psychological things of, wow, this manager actually cares about me because I'm being given a chance to share.
Right, right. I remember when we were talking about it first too, I thought that was cool because it's actually like a mindfulness exercise every morning. It's valuable for the rest of the team to understand where you're feeling. But if you go in and you're like, I'm feeling stressed today, then you have acknowledged that and you're thinking about that as you show up to every meeting that you have that day. I think that's really important to kind of think about, okay, where am I at today as I kind of jump into a lot of my conversations, because that will definitely show up in some way for some people. And you just want to be mindful of that. So I think that's super cool. And to your point, it is very integrated. It's not like you have to go out of Slack, your normal forum for communication, to engage in it. So it doesn't feel like it's this removed thing. So lots of kind of talk around return to work and what work is going to look like in the fall. I know when you all started, maybe you were targeting a lot of these fully distributed companies or maybe these hybridized companies, although there were less of them, as I imagine we'll see kind of coming up in the fall. So what do you think this whole return to work is going to look like? What's this transition going to feel like? And how do you think Kona fits into both, you know, fully remote, hybrid, in-person teams? Like, what does that look like?
Great question. It's something that we would ask our customers all the time and have been over the past few months as return to work is looming closer and closer. We always thought that we would have to go after only fully remote teams, at least at the beginning when like it was the height of the pandemic, everybody was fully remote. We didn't have to worry about that. And we would always ask our customers, or lately we've been asking our customers, what do you think about Kona as you start going back to work? Because a lot of our customers are going to be partially in office, 2-3 days, 1 or 2 days at least in the office. And what was really unexpected is all of those people have been telling us, we need Kona more in a hybrid world than we did in a fully remote world. Because in a fully remote world, everyone is on the same playing field. And so everyone kind of like makes that effort to an extent to connect with each other. And Kona is a good vehicle to be able to do that and share how you're feeling. But in a hybrid world, you have some people that are in office, some people that are out of office. And so there's a big mismatch in terms of the people that are in office. It's easy for those who aren't in office to feel more disconnected because they see that the people that are in office are able to have those interactions. And therefore, the typical like best practice for any hybrid company is if there's one person, for example, that's remote in a meeting, everybody should behave as if the meeting was remote. And similarly with Kona, what we're hearing is, yeah, we're all going to still want to check in because one, for the straightforward, for the people that aren't in office, and on any given day, about 40% of the team is typically going to be in the office. Second, and more importantly, Kona is not a remote team tool. Remote teams has more so been like a go-to-market strategy for us. And remote work is reflective of a focus on culture. Companies that embrace remote are typically the companies that are more culture focused. And those are the companies that are going to embrace more hybrid and more fully remote work going forward. And so what's actually really interesting is Kona is not a remote work tool, it's a culture tool. And so the daily emotional check-in part of things is something that we're hearing people want to continue doing even in a fully in-person environment, because it's not a conversation that you have about like, how are you really feeling? What's really going on? Even when you're in person, it's typically, hey, what's up? You see, you can maybe sense some body language, but nothing like explicit about what's going on in your life or in your day. And so what we didn't expect is for every single one of our customers to come back and say, hey, we want to keep using Kona. They're signing annual contracts and really engaging with a mind to continue doing so as they quote unquote go back to work.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting challenge that you bring up around a lot of these hybridized work models. It is really challenging, you know, to navigate the site safety and what that feels like for every person when the work setup is different. Obviously, that's been really challenging through, you know, this transition to distributed work, but at least everyone was kind of in the same boat, navigating similar stressors maybe, and that's going to look very different. So outside of leveraging a tool like Kona, what are some other trust and psych safety drivers that managers can keep in mind as they navigate this transition back to work? Like, what other programs or resources or enablement best practices do you have for people kind of as they prepare for this transition back?
So much. There's a lot. Remote management and doing remote management well is really, really difficult. And that's why we're building the company that we're building. Really, what good leadership is, it's a set of practices and habits that the manager and the team has. So, and a lot of it is just showing that you're making an effort, showing that you care, showing that this is something that you prioritize and that you genuinely care about the person. And that's surprisingly hard to do remotely and in person, because especially in high growth startup environments or generally in a fast paced business corporate culture that we have here in the US, it's really easy to forget to care about the person because you have so many things to do and so many things on your plate. And so the first thing is to always make sure to take a step back and show that you care about that person. Whether it's like 5 minutes doing an actual like live red, yellow, green check in meetings, we do that all the time where it's like, hey, I'm meeting you after a while. What's going on? How are you feeling? Red, yellow, green. Just quick check in on like what's going on in that person's life before jumping into work is one practice that's common. Being super, for lack of a better word, religious about the one-on-ones, making sure to do them every week, making sure to actually open up and have serious conversations, because one-on-ones are one of those things where it's a recurring meeting with your direct report, but it can get very tactically focused very easily. It's easy to say, okay, these are the things that I need to do. These are the things I'm going to work on, and have it be in just another work check-in. In a one-on-one, have a unique opportunity where you have set time to actually have those deeper conversations about how are you really feeling? Let's stay on top of stress and burnout levels, all that kind of stuff. And in tech, we have had historically this problem of you work 2 years at a company and you leave. That shouldn't be the case, that you shouldn't want to leave a company after 2 years. And so it's a lot of it is doing the basics really well consistently. So doing the check-ins, doing the one-on-ones consistently, doing them right. And there's tons of templates online about how to do one-on-one well. Kona eventually is going to help managers actually run one-on-ones. And another thing that we do on our team internally that's kind of a hack into happiness is gratitude. It's been scientifically proven that if you do a gratitude like exercise once a day or once a week at least, it improves happiness and general productivity for everyone. And so we do this at the end of every weekly retro. We do a gratitude practice saying, hey, what are you grateful for this week? And that's really, really helped. Honestly, it's a good kind of way to step back and think about what we're lucky to have. Another thing that Kona will eventually do, but is just a powerful habit to embrace in general, is reflection. It's something that not enough people do consistently. A lot of people think some of this stuff is voodoo or it's too like wishy-washy in terms of like writing down things in a journal about how your day went or how your week went. But doing 15 minutes of reflection every day. There was a Harvard study that came out, I think a couple of years ago, of teams. They did like they analyzed 200 teams, 100 teams did a daily 15-minute reflection, and 100 of the teams didn't do it. And the teams that did just 15 minutes of reflecting on how your day went every single day, within 3 weeks, improved their productivity by 20 to 30%. And so there's like a marked improvement in how you perform if you're doing some of these squishy things. And yeah, the last thing I'll say is it takes time. If you want to build trust when you've lost it, or if you want to make a change and show that you as a manager are someone that cares about your people, it's going to take time. It takes months. And it's essential to do, because in this decade, it's the decade of culture. Remote work is definitely like a theme of culture-focused companies. But in the 2020s, companies that don't prioritize an open, welcoming, psychologically safe environment for everybody, people in our generation don't want to work at companies where they don't feel cared for. And in the knowledge economy, with global access to talent, the best cultures are going to be the ones that keep the best people, and they're going to win long term. And so it is starting to become very clearly a business advantage to having a welcoming culture where people want to come work for you, because you're able to attract and keep the best talent.
100%. Yeah. I mean, especially in tech, like if you're not happy in your job, you have, you know, 50 other options at your fingertips. You just kind of go online and they're all right there. And so it is definitely kind of an age where managers, companies, they really need to invest in their people. I love what you shared around the empathy piece. I think especially through COVID, it's one of those things that really, it was in everyone's face. Like you're literally talking to people in their homes. You're kind of a lot more immersed in what they're kind of, what their values are and their priorities are and what they're kind of dealing with outside of work. Whereas in a traditional office environment, everyone kind of shows up and you don't really have that insight. And so I think that that is a good takeaway from the experience that we've all had. Just because we all kind of go back into offices, we can't forget about the whole person that's coming in and everything that they have going on outside of their job. We love that. Like it's what gives everyone a different perspective and a different set of experiences to pull from that brings better ideas and stuff to the table. So I really love that focus on empathy. I also like the reflection piece. I think that's a great idea for a feature. I think what's cool about that is obviously there's a lot of value that somebody can get out of opening up in a one-on-one and talking directly with their manager. There's an equal amount of value that you can get just by like writing down what you took from your week and what went well and what, you know, you feel like could have gone better and how something landed. And even if that's like only for yourself and only for your eyes, that can be incredibly helpful. It's a good practice. So I think that's a really cool idea. Those are great ideas. Well, I guess switching gears a little bit, I want to ask a little bit about your entrepreneurship journey. I'm sure starting your own company is no easy task. And so what was that journey like for you? How did you kind of maintain a sense of resilience as you navigated every hurdle along the way? What was particularly challenging or trying? And how did all of that go down? How did you navigate all of that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I've been doing startups since I was probably 15 or 16 years old. I started my first, I wouldn't really call it a startup, but I built my first product in high school. I used to do a ton of like debate and Model UN. And this is back in India. And I noticed that there was no real place for people to like compete online virtually. And so all the debates that were happening, you had to like pay a ton of money and go to some other school and do debates. So started an online like debate platform, basically like a peer-to-peer live debate platform where you'd have like moderated competitive debates and you could compete to like go up the rankings. And that kind of took off a little bit in just like the little debate circles in India, which was kind of my first experience of building something that was giving people like a cool virtual experience. And that was really fun. But for some reason, I've always found myself thinking about problems in enterprise. Even that product, I turned it into like a enterprise communications training play where I was training people at companies and how to communicate better through debate and public speaking. In India, effective communication is something that isn't really taught in schools. And so a lot of the technical folks have this problem of they're not able to communicate their ideas effectively. And me having done debates since I was like 8 or 9 years old, and that was something that I really cared about. And so I was weird as like a 15, 16 year old kid, I was like going and training all these people at companies like PayPal, partnering up with orgs like Toastmasters and like how they can communicate it more effectively through debate, which was really fun and like very imposter syndrome inducing, but helped me kind of like realize like this is something I really care about. Came to the US, turned the debate platform into like a crowdsourced news discussion play because I saw that the political environment here is super polarized and people, there was a large and growing minority of people that had a certain political view but wanted to hear the other side. And so turned the debate platform into a news discussion platform where you'd see opinions that you didn't agree with. And so that was kind of what we were trying to go after. And we built some technology in terms of like a content ranking algorithm based off of people's like personality and psychology and things like that. And that eventually turned into We had some managers, we were in UCLA's undergrad accelerator program. We had some managers at a couple companies say, hey, what's this like algorithm thing you're using for personality? Can I try it out for my team at work? And so my mind again went to the work thing, tried building tools, like basically workplace psychology based performance management tools, and failed miserably with that. I tried to pivot to like a workplace psychology based new employee onboarding tool, failed as well. This was like sophomore year of college. And so I guess my journey is having made just a ton of mistakes. And I think the key mistake as a young founder, like 17, 18 year old kid, was my idea of entrepreneurship or startups was you are reading about something, you have an idea, you build it, and then you find users for it, which is totally not how you're supposed to do things. We were looking for basically a problem to fit a solution that we'd already built, rather than finding a problem that we cared about and then building a solution to it. And so in October, when we came back to school, we think there's something in the remote workspace. By this time, I'd started working with Andrew and Kareen, and let's just learn about it. And having that experience of multiple failed products, things that never like achieved any real traction, I think like taught me a lot in terms of how to focus on the right things, it's really easy to start getting focused on like vanity metrics and trying to get investors and all that kind of stuff, when really all that matters is building a product, solving a problem that people really face and that you care about, and then building a product that they love and actually achieves those goals that they're trying to achieve. So those failures, I think, are what made me really understand that. And yeah, I guess after that, we did things the right way, and here we are.
Yeah. I mean, it's all part of the journey. It sounds like you've been in the entrepreneurship world for quite some time and ahead of a lot of this sort of, flip of a light switch remote transition, which is really cool. It sounds like from a lot of what you've shared through this conversation, there are learnings from Kona that you're implementing today in your current company as you're building it. You've talked a little bit about the reflections of the sharing gratitude of, how you run one-on-ones and things like that. Are there other things that you'd like to share that as you kind of build Kona, as you build this company, you've taken from this tool as, okay, like we're going to use this knowledge as we scale Kona for the years to come?
100%. Tons of little things. A couple of the big ones. One, we dog food our own product. We use Kona internally every day. And as the team starts scaling, we're not yet in our target customer in terms of size. We usually go after much bigger companies. So our customers are companies like Greenhouse, Nextdoor, Asana, Figma, Medium, kind of like the large growth-focused, culture-focused companies. So we're not yet in our own target market, but even at like a five-person team, starting to scale that team and using Kona has made me realize like how important it is to stay connected with people and stay on top of people's emotional states, because I learn things about my team. Sometimes we can work pretty siloed, and I know I might not have like a super like deep conversation with somebody every day, but I can kind of check in with people through Kona and see what's going on with them. And I think a couple of little things. One, people love just like the kind of serendipitous, like you just checked in with them saying, hey, how are you feeling? What's going on? And have a quick conversation with them. That can go a really long way towards making somebody feel connected. And it's really easy to feel like frustrated and isolated. And when someone just pops into your virtual office room, we use a virtual office tool called Tandem for synchronous work. Or even if it's just like a Slack message saying, hey, what's going on? Like, how are you feeling? That can really change someone's mood. So that's one of the things I think I've learned is a lot of management and good leadership is the little things and doing the little things really, really well. I think also hiring wise, hire slow, fire fast, the typical like tropes. I don't actually know if I agree with that. I think there are certain things about our culture that are non-negotiable, and we're like very pedantic and rabid about our values, and being very upfront about those things, I think has really helped in terms of like, there have been tons of candidates that I've come across that were super technically capable, but were just not necessarily a culture ad in that sense to our team. And I don't like using the word culture fit, because it inherently propagates finding the same type of person again and again, which is not what you want. And that brings me to my last point, is I think one of the things being in this space, I've realized so much, two things. One, how important work-life balance is in a startup environment. It's really easy for any company that's under 100 people. I feel like once you cross 100 people, you start prioritizing culture a little more. But a lot of companies, especially at the seed stage, like 5 to 25, 30 people, have this mentality of always need to be grinding 12-hour days, 16-hour days, working all the time, working weekends. And that is the like idealized grind culture that startups propagate. And I hate that. I hate that for myself. It's not how I want to operate. A lot of people are able to get success through that, and I respect that endlessly. But for me, I feel like I achieve more in 50 hours of working in a week than I ever did earlier when I was trying to work 80 hours a day. I think the work-life balance piece, the balance is actually what makes my work more productive. And so that's one thing we've learned. But going back to the earlier point about culture, the diversity angle and how actually important it is right from the get-go, a lot of people still think of diversity as something that you're doing as either a PR stunt or you do it because there's a lot of like social pressure to have a diverse team, when really there's a business competitive advantage to having a diverse team, especially in our line of business, what we're doing, emotional intelligence, having different perspectives on the team in terms of like, this is how this person will react to this, or thinking through how different people will react to different features or changes that we're making in the product. That has actually really, that's been the reason for our early success. The fact that we have 3 out of the 5 people on our team are women. We have like 100% people of color team. That kind of stuff is like, it's not something you do when you scale further in order to like attract better talent. It's something that you do right from the get-go in order to make a great product. And I think that that's another thing that I've learned, is starting it early is hard because inherently your networks are people that are similar to you, but it's already started paying off for us. And it's not just like a long-term investment. It's a short-term like positive.
Yeah, yeah. From everything you're sharing, whether it's your values or your work culture or how you're thinking about diversity, it feels like these are all things that you've really articulated why these things matter and why they're important and how they show up here, rather than, all right, work-life balance, we need to check that box off. And diversity, we need to check that box off. And values, we need something to put on our website. I mean, I think, and that's super important, right? To have all of that stuff. Otherwise, you reach 100 people and you're like, I mean, what is our culture? How do we think about diversity? How do we think about everybody's kind of operating very differently? And on those value-driven things, obviously, you know, you do want to talk about them in interviews and you do want to have a discussion around it. Because, I mean, Darren and I were talking about this in another podcast, Fully Distributed Company as well. And in candidates that are coming in, like, they don't have those cues in an office that they can pick up on, all right, this is the way people are interacting, and this is how late people are staying in the office, and this is the culture around getting lunch, and, you know, and in meetings, it looks like people are, you know, brainstorming. You don't see any of that. And so it's so important to talk about those things so that, I mean, it's important enough you're bringing it up in an interview, but B, you know, you're able to attract people that are just, you know, in alignment with some of those things and can add to it. So yeah, Sid, this has been so awesome. Where can people go to learn more about Kona? I love everything that you all are working on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, so it's heykona.com. That's HEYKONA.com. Check us out on the website. You can actually just add Kona to Slack, apply for access to the product. We're still like white glove onboarding manager. So there's kind of a pretty long wait list of companies that applied for access. But if you reach out to me at Sid at psykeinsights.com, that's SIKEinsights.com, or yeah, that's all the information is on the website. We're happy to bump super qualified folks up the waitlist as well. There's currently, I think at time of recording, we're at position like 260 something, but yeah, always happy to bump super qualified managers and teams up and give them early access. So yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, I really appreciate you taking time to come on the show. I mean, I've said this before, I love everything that you all are working on. I think it's super important. And it's always really inspiring to hear stories of entrepreneurs taking the leap to co-found their own ventures and learn more about how they navigated, you know, the different twists and turns in that journey. So appreciate it and good luck to all of you.
Thank you so much. And yeah, follow me on Twitter also, because we are hiring. We're looking for our first software engineers. And soon also we're going to be looking for customer success people, sales and marketing people. So definitely, yeah, stay in touch. LinkedIn is Sid Pendia. Twitter is Pendia Sid. So yeah, come talk to us.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more stories like this, please subscribe for the weekly drop and feel free to share around with your people and talent colleagues. I'd love your feedback. So please leave a review and let us know what you enjoyed and what types of topics you'd like to see covered in the future. The more reviews and subscribers we get, the more quality content we can consistently deliver to you. If you're interested in being on the podcast, feel free to reach out to me at resica@engageandempower.org. See you next week.